Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is really about the change in our cultural understanding. What's really going on in the world? Who's really running the show? What's behind it? How do UFOs fit into all this? And tonight I'll be talking to Jim Mars. He is a person who's really looked behind the scenes. His book, Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, Alien Agenda, Ruled by Secrecy, The War on Freedom, major books in understanding the true structure of government, of the powers that really are controlling the forces of the world. Welcome, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Alan. It's a pleasure to be with you and all of your audience.
Thank you. You know, because you have such a wide view of the whole situation with, you've looked at the Kennedy thing, you've looked at the UFO thing, you've gone into, you know, the government cover-ups and all those levels. Who would you say is the main force that's really running the world, running the show?
That's the big question, isn't it? And it even goes deeper than that because I've been asked plenty of times, and it really is a burning question. We all know that there's people trying to run the world, if you will. But when I get asked is, you know, it seems like they're making decisions, getting us into wars, and producing bad air and bad food and bad water and. You know, it's almost like they're trying to kill us. And why would, you know, I can understand greed. I can understand corporate indifference and the concern for the bottom line, trying to make a profit. But why would anybody in their right mind want to kill off the goose that lays the golden eggs, you know?
Well, I think it's because it's easier to control a smaller population. I mean,
exactly. And the globalists, as they call themselves, because they operate, they're looking at it from the perspective of the whole world. In fact, they're not all that excited about the United States because we're just not the most profitable department they have. And they're quite clear. Georgia Guidestones, Agenda 21, the pronouncements of the Council on Foreign Relations, Prince Philip, of the royalty in Europe, you know, he's quoted as saying that if there is a reincarnation, he'd like to come back as a deadly virus so he could help take care of the overpopulation problem. So
who said that? Prince Charles said that?
Prince Philip.
Prince Philip.
Yeah, Prince Philip. We've had others. Maxwell Taylor, for example, our ambassador to Vietnam, and a ranking Council on Foreign Relations member, he was quoted years ago saying that by the beginning of the next century, talking about right now, he said, we have to reduce the world's population. He said, this will be done through disease and think AIDS in Africa and regional wars, think Iraq and Afghanistan. So they're following an agenda that they've actually laid out, and they basically want to get rid of us. But again, the question is, why? Why would they want to get rid of everybody? And I think one of the answers, Alan, is that they seem to think and they are working on the belief that the world is overpopulated. In fact, this is a kind of a pervasive argument that's being used on all fronts, pollution, environmental change, et cetera, et cetera, when there's just too many people. But let me tell you something. I heard this, and I didn't quite believe it, but I've checked up on it, and it's true. In Hong Kong today, the average living space is 1,700 square feet. Now, you're in New York, 1,700 yeah. square feet apartment, that's not too bad, is it?
Mine is like 300 square feet, so yeah.
You go. So the average living space in Hong Kong is 1,700 square feet. So based on an average living space of 1,700 square feet, the entire 7 billion human population of the world could live quite comfortably just in the state of Texas. Now, yeah. I live in Texas, so please, don't everybody come running to Texas.
But, be a little crowded there for you.
Get crowded. But I think you get my point. It's really not an overpopulation problem as so much as it's a population concentration problem. Everybody's jammed into these big cities.
Yeah, I think it's an energy problem. I mean, I fly across country a lot, and you look down, and for hundreds, probably thousands of miles, there's not one structure out west, you know, flying over the Rocky Mountains and the whole, West Coast. There's hundreds and hundreds of miles, absolutely nothing. You could fit, you know, probably 1,000 Manhattans with 10 million, and just in that square acreage that is totally empty. So I think the real problem is energy. I think
energy. And here's the thing, too. See, let me tell you something. 20 years ago, as a newspaper reporter, I was interviewing energy experts, and I was talking to this one fella who had all kinds of degrees and was certainly an expert, and at that time I was getting pretty fired up about solar energy, and I said, well, why can't we go to solar energy? And he said, that's a good idea. He said, but that's 20 years in the future. Well, excuse me, here we are, and we still don't have it. But anyway, then he went on and said, to provide enough electricity to power the city of Los Angeles, you'd have to have solar panels covering the entire state of Arizona. And I said, okay, because I didn't want to argue with the expert. But as I went off, I got thinking about it, and I realized where the flaw is in his thinking. You see, he's been schooled and conditioned to only think about central generation. So based on in other words, you generate the electricity and then you pipe it to Los Angeles. So based on that, what he said was probably true. But what he's not thinking of is, wait a minute, what if everybody in Los Angeles put solar panels on their roof? Then they could power the whole city, and everybody would be basically free from the utility company. But therein lies the problem, and that's why we don't have solar energy.
Because
they haven't figured out how to make a cloud come hang over your house if you don't pay your electric bill.
Right. Of course, it's all covered up by the big corporate multinational, people want to hold on to the money. But even more than solar, what about the Tesla idea of free energy? You know, within this one cubic meter of space, there's enough energy to power the city of Los Angeles or New York. We just haven't. So we haven't. Well, I'm sure people have discovered it, that's the real problem. If we could get that free energy from the vacuum, the zero-point energy, as people call it, we'd have enough power to cultivate all those thousands of miles of open desert and bring water, and change the sea into fresh water. I mean, that's all that's missing to have a really beautiful paradise on Earth.
Just have an Eden on Earth. And Alan, you're absolutely right. In fact, now you've hit on the answer of why they're still sitting on the issue of UFOs. They don't want to admit that there's really UFOs up there, even though anybody with half a brain and one eye can go on the internet, punch in UFOs, and you spend probably the rest of your life looking at pictures of UFOs. Now, so what's the deal? It's because the people who truly run this country, and I'm not talking about the president of the Congress, I'm talking about the people who tell them what to do, I don't think they really care if you and I and everybody else knows that there's extraterrestrials out there, but what they're concerned about is if we know for certain that UFOs are real, then we know for certain that there's alternative technologies out there, free energy, if you will, and it might upset their monopolies over energy, transportation, military hardware, communications, medicine, et cetera, et cetera. That, and so they keep the lid on it. They don't want us to know that there's things other than their monopolies. In other words, we might start arguing about having to pay ever-increasing prices for gasoline if we knew we didn't need gasoline.
Right. You know those UFOs are not getting here by filling up their gas tank.
That's true. And they're not getting here by big old rockets either. That's what kills me. Even on some of the more modern science fiction movies and stuff, they still got these giant rockets blowing flame and smoke and, booster rockets. And it's, excuse me, that's old hat. In fact, I'm probably most of your audience may have at one point wondered, why in the world have we canceled the space shuttle?
And why did we cancel?
The reason is because it's obsolete. We got anti-gravity. We got other stuff that they're not telling us about.
Do you think we have the U.S. Secret government, secret military has anti-gravity machines?
Well, I tell you what, I think Gary McKinnon got onto it when he hacked into the Pentagon computers, not trying to be malicious. In fact, the Pentagon has admitted that he didn't do any damage to anything, but he got in there and he found out about our secret space fleet and the names of the officers and where their launching places were and the names of the ships that are out there. And I know this is true because I've talked to a Navy commander who was part of all that, okay? That's what they don't want out.
Right. But I totally agree with you. But who is the main – I mean, I know I asked that in the beginning and said that's the big question. But who do you know of? Who's the guy who killed Kennedy? Who are the families? Who do you suspect are the people that really run the show?
Well, there's a handful of names that you can bring up, like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the Mellons and, you know, a few of the other names that people are known. But a lot of them, people, it goes higher than that, and those names are not even commonplace. Number one, this year, for a change, they've actually admitted that the Bilderberg meeting was taking place, and they even published membership list, or at least the ones who agreed to have their names listed. Now, there are others on there who, for various reasons, said, leave my name off. And so those are the ones probably that really have the power. The rest of them just want to sit at the same lunch table as the cool kids, you know, and be counted.
But tell people what the Bilderbergers are for people who haven't heard about them.
Okay, the Bilderbergs are so secretive that they don't even have a formal name. They're called the Bilderbergs because they were first publicly known to be meeting in 1954 at the Bilderberg Hotel in Osbeck, Holland. And it was held by the Prince Barnhard of the Netherlands, who had been a Nazi SS officer and later had to resign and leave the Bilderbergers because he got caught up in a defense scandal over defense purchases from the United States. But the Bilderberg meets once a year under heavily guarded secret circumstances. And for the longest time, I mean, I've been at this since probably the 60s. And back then, nobody would even acknowledge that these guys even existed. At least now they admit that, yeah, we are meeting. But now consider this, Alan. What do you think the media, the mass media, the TV, the radio media, what do you think they'd be doing if it was learned that all of the owners of the National Football League franchises were meeting, say, in New York in a big, fancy hotel surrounded by armed guards, and they wouldn't let anybody in, and they refused to tell anybody what they were talking about? Wouldn't they go ballistic? Wouldn't they yell restraint of trade, collusion, you know?
Would you want to hear how vague? I'm just actually looking at the Bilderberger meetings. This is their website. They said the Bilderberger is an annual conference designed to foster dialogue between Europe and North America. The conference was established in 1954 as a forum for informal discussion, bringing together individuals who share an active interest in affairs relevant to the relationship between Europe and North America. I mean, they're saying absolutely nothing here.
No, it just sounds like a good old boy get-together. But the problem is that if you go down through that membership list, you'll find out that it includes most of the most important statesmen, diplomats, rulers, royalty, industrial heads, the heads of manufacturing. And furthermore, in my book, Rule by Secrecy, I have laid it all out how that when decisions that are made at Bilderberg, more often than not, become official government policy in the United States and in the U.K., Canada, and other Western nations. It's a meeting. These are the people who get together. Now, a lot of people have trouble with the idea, how can a handful of people control the world, you know? Well, let me tell you something. There was a study done by the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in 2011, they studied 43,000 multinational corporations. And what they found was that these 43,000 multinational corporations are controlled by only 1,318 companies, and these have interlocking ownership. And of that 1,300 companies, there's only 147 interlocking firms that control most of that, and most of that 147 firms are controlled by approximately 20 banks, okay? And they have interlocking directorships and interlocking ownership. And what's wild is this study that the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology made, they did not even analyze family, social, or other types of relationships by owners and stockholders. So where we're talking, now that's, Alan, that's an incredibly concentrated source of power.
Right. No, obviously, it obviously seems to be controlled by just a few people that, you know, the president and all these people that appear to run the countries, you know, are powerless.
No, they answer to these folks, yeah.
Right.
That's why if Congress had any power, we'd see some changes being made. But we don't.
But they have no power.
You go back through the Republican presidencies and the Democratic presidencies, and the faces change, but the policies don't. Barack Obama came in on as a breath of fresh air. He's going to really bring change, you know? And what changed? We're still fighting in Afghanistan. Looks like we're going to go back and fight some more in Iraq. I mean, you know, what changed? Nothing.
Nothing, yeah. No, it's obvious. And, you know, the big thing, the big machine is the propaganda to stand up for your country, right or wrong, and to go into war and to, you know, fight for whatever the government's telling you to fight for. And now all these veterans are committing suicide. They're sick. You know, no one's taking care of them. It's really awful, that whole situation.
Now you're getting to my big gripe, Alan. I can understand faceless corporations making bad decisions just based on trying to uphold the bottom profit line. But my thing, I come from a background in journalism. I was schooled. I have a degree in journalism. I've been in journalism my whole life. And I'm here to tell you there is no journalism anymore, okay? There are five corporations, Time Warner, Disney, Vivendi, Viacom, News Corporation, and Bertelsmann in print, and these corporations control everything you see and hear. They control the networks, the satellites, the cable, the magazines, the newspapers, the books, the book publishing, the book clubs, even the billboards. Everything you see and hear is through these controlled by five multinational corporations, and they have, according to Project at this university that did the study, Project Censored, shows that they have interlocking ownership and directors. So there's a handful of people that control everything we see and hear, except for fine folks like you and a handful of others.
Right. And but a big question I want to ask you is, do you see a change? I mean, this has been going on, since the 30s, 40s, 50s, this kind of ruled by secrecy. But is there some disintegration within that structure happening, or is it still as tight as ever? I'm just curious.
No, it's breaking apart. In fact, this is what we're seeing right now with the formation of what they call the BRIC nations. That's Russia, Brazil, or to go in order, Brazil, Russia, Iran, China, Korea, I think. And they're balking. They're not going along with this New World Order plan. And, of course, that makes them the enemies, the axis of evil or whatever. But, no, it's not as monolithic as it used to be, because there used to be only a handful of information outlets. You read the New York Times, Washington Post, your local paper, which was pretty much dominated by the Associated Press and or the United Press International for anything outside your own city. Some news magazines, and that's about it. Today, the Internet has broken all that open. In fact, I just got through looking at some figures on the mass media, and the readership in newspapers is way down, and the advertising dollar is way off, and even the TV networks are all struggling trying to keep up because people are getting their news and information off the internet today. So
Your friends
are only watching one network or reading one newspaper, I can assure you they are not well informed.
But I want to ask you another major question as far as, I mean, are we looking at from a, you and me and other people, from a Western perspective? Because obviously the China is not controlled by the same forces. And also I just heard a very interesting theory by Howard Bloom. You know Howard Bloom?
Mm-hmm.
He said that Iran convinced the U.S. to get rid of Saddam in Iraq, so they would have this like Shia-Sunni conflict, so Iran could come in and start controlling Iraq and have the sort of situation we're in today. Now, I don't know.
Well, we're in today, if you notice, yeah. The latest word is that John Kerry is having quiet talks with Iran, trying to see if we maybe could kind of allied with them a little bit to try to stop this Muslim takeover there in Iran, or at least the Shiites.
Right. So we're not ruled by secrecy. Is only whoever those high-powered families are. They're not ruling China or the Middle East or the Saudis or is there a network? I'm asking behind all that.
Yes.
Okay.
China, for example. See. First off, you have to understand what their game plan is. And if you want to know what that is, I would recommend you read a book. It was written by a British Fabian socialist back in 1948 named Eric Arthur Blair. But he wrote under the pen name George Orwell. Now, he was not part of the royalty, but he was very well connected with the British aristocracy. And I think that in his book, he transposed the year numbers and named it 1984. He laid out the plan for the world, which is to create a worldwide socialist system, but not monolithic, not one world government. In the book 1984, we see that the world was divided into three economic sections, Oceania, East Asiana, and Asiana. In today's world, in reality, it's the European Union, the soon-to-be North American Union that they're working on, and the future Asian Union. Now, the Asian Union is going to be easy enough because China and most of the Asian nations are pyramids of power. That is, one person or a handful of people has all the power, and then the power trickles down to the people. So all you have to do is get those people at the top that's in control. You pay them, bring them onto your board, make them a board member, and it'd be real easy to create the Asian Union. In fact, the Rothschilds have already done lots of lucrative business deals. The same thing with Rupert Murdoch and other people who are these globalists. They have all kinds of deals going with China. Go down to your local store, try to buy something. Chances are it says made in China. So they're producing everything, and we're buying everything. The problem is we're not producing anything, so our money is getting worse and worse less.
But isn't one of the wild cards here the Middle East, the Muslim fundamentalists?
Exactly.
So what's happening with that in terms
well,
of the
see,
world?
Well, see, that's the thing. Even through the Cold War, the one place where Russia and the United States and the U.K. Kind of agreed on was that they did whatever they could to try to prevent a Muslim empire from coming into being, because if you take all the Muslim nations and if they were to ally themselves with each other, you'd have a Muslim empire that stretched from Indonesia and Southeast Asia all the way through India and all the way into the Middle East and then into Spain and then into Europe, where there's heavy concentrations of Muslims. And so they even worked together trying to prevent that. That was one of the main reasons that Russia invaded Afghanistan back in the 80s. It was to try to keep it from becoming a hardline conservative Muslim country.
Right. So what do we do? How do they fit in with the Bilderbergers? And how do they, is that
well,
the conflict?
Well, because they profit from from chaos. You know, it's kind of like the motto of the Masons, ab chao, ordo chao, which is out of chaos, we make order. But first you gotta have the chaos. And with chaos, that's easy enough because you do what we're doing right now. We arm the Syrian rebels. We arm the Egyptian rebels. We're causing all that foment over there. In fact, I don't want to say anything good about Saddam Hussein. He obviously was a tyrant, but he was their tyrant. And it's not our job to go over there and tell them they can't have whatever tyrant they want. So, yeah, we got rid of Saddam Hussein, but now look what's happening. The whole country's falling apart. At least right. He held it together.
Well, that's the thing. He wasn't a nice guy, but he now there are many more people have been killed and murdered, and the whole country's divided.
Look how much money they've made off the wars and the defense contracts and just all the ancillaries and the oil that they got control of. And in Afghanistan, they got the poppy fields back into production, year before we invaded Afghanistan, the Taliban, and I don't have anything particularly good to say about them, but because they were religious fanatics, but they were religious fanatics, and they had eliminated 96% of the poppy fields, and that was hurting the world's heroin trade. And so we go in and invade, and the next year, according to the mass media in the Europe and in Britain, the poppy crop was, having a bumper season. They were doing great.
Wait, so the poppies could be turned into heroin, so the...
Right.
So is the final war then sort of between the Muslim fundamentalists and the Western, what do you call, the monopolists?
The banksters. The banksters. Yeah. No, it's the creation of the chaos. See, when they get the Sunnis and the Shiites and the Kurds all fighting with each other, they all have to be armed. And who's the world's largest arm merchant? The United States of America. We are arming the world. And don't you find that kind of ironic that at a time when our government is just pushing as hard as they can to take guns away from Americans, we're providing them to every other person in the world?
The United States
each year sells more arms and ammunition than Russia and China combined.
And who are we selling all these arms and ammunition to?
Anybody that we can get to buy them. That's what I'm saying. They're stirring all this up. They're creating it all. In fact, the murder of Ambassador Stevens in Syria, apparently, from my sources, he was going to blow the whistle on the gun running that was going on over there. So they had to take him out, and that's why when they got their little mobs and their little terrorists that they had armed, that our arms were going to, and they attacked the embassy there, and they hollered for help, and nothing was done. They didn't want him a-talking.
Well, do you think all these school shootings, though, are part of a plot to... some people say in the really out there conspiracies that these gunmen have been conditioned, mind controlled, they've got the weapons, and they send them into these places to kill innocent people so we can get our guns taken away. But do you think, do you go that far saying these?
No, I don't go quite that far because although I do know that through MK Ultra and Project Monarch and other things that are well documented, that they do have the capability of brainwashing people, especially people who are a little bit on the edge anyway mentally. But I'll tell you what, the whole thing, let me tell you something. I grew up in Texas. We had guns. We took guns to school. A lot of my friends had guns, rifles, shotguns in their pickup truck.
Why do you take guns to school, though? Why?
Well, because you go hunting before or after.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And nobody shot anybody. Why are there school shootings now? The media is totally falling down on the job because all they can talk about is guns. The real problem are the psychotropic drugs. Virtually every person involved in a school shooting is either on these psychiatric drugs, Prozac, Zoloft, or they're coming off of them, which apparently is even worse than going on them. So you've got someone who's a little bit on the edge anyway, mentally, and then you load them up with these psychiatric drugs, which right there on the label, they say can induce suicidal and homicidal tendencies. And then you have these school shootings. And then at that point, yes, all of a sudden then this is being used to push this anti-gun agenda and tell everybody we've got to take all the guns up. And yet all I could say is, folks, study your history. In the whole 20th century, there's been, 60, 70 million people killed, and the number one cause is governments.
War.
Hitler.
War.
Well, not just war. The Holocaust, Hitler, Pol Pot, in China, Mao, the great Cultural Revolution, et cetera, and in each instance, it's happened in progress that first they register guns, and then they take up the guns, confiscation, and then they begin to round up people and execute them. It just goes on and on. That's why in the Second Amendment of the Constitution, there's no mention of the word hunting. our right to own firearms is there very specifically, in the words of our forefathers, so that we can protect ourselves from a tyrannical government.
Right. If a government gets out of hand, of course they didn't. But I do think they should outlaw automatic weapons. Is there any reason someone needs to have an automatic weapon?
That's something that probably could be. Well, actually, automatic weapons are illegal anyway. All right,
right.
And have been since I think 1968. They pretty well. Well, I think they outlawed machine guns back in the 30s. But by the gun laws passed in 1968 after the two Kennedy assassinations, that pretty well closed that one, unless you register them with the federal government and pay a hefty fee. So we don't have to worry about automatic weapons anyway. What they're talking about now is what they call assault rifles, which is really pretty ridiculous because, if you pick up a rock and kill somebody with it, is that an assault rock?
Right. What's an assault? What is it? What are they calling? What kind of gun is that?
Well, they call what they call an assault rifle is a rifle that is probably semi-automatic, which means it fires every time you pull the trigger. It's not totally automatic. Automatic weapons are illegal already. And if any of them get used, then obviously whoever's using them is violating the law. So there's no sense in passing another law against something that's already illegal. And then what they also call an assault rifle is a semi-automatic weapon that has been modified. They put little folding stocks on them and little added magazines and a little air cool foregrip and all this stuff make them look cool. The AR-15 looks almost identical to the military's M16, but it's a civilian model and it does not fire automatically. So this is all just window dressing. Okay, a gun's a gun. I know people with black powder muzzle loading muskets like they use in the war between the states, and those things are perfectly legal. They're considered antique weapons, and it's not even against the law to have one of those, but I guarantee you put 71 grains of powder in it and a mini ball, and it'd take your arm off, okay? They're just as deadly as any other gun. Any gun's deadly, and the problem's not the guns. The problem is the people who misuse them, and the people who are mostly misusing them are on these drugs, but you never get told this because the mass media is so dependent on the pharmaceutical advertising. Just go turn on the TV, watch any program, and when the commercials come, if they're not selling you a truck, they're selling you a drug.
Oh, so the pharmaceuticals cannot be implicated because they...
They'd lose advertising.
That's a good
advertisers,
point.
The big advertisers say, well, we're not going to advertise with you if you're bad-mouthing our products.
I see. So they just leave that part out of the story completely.
That equation is missing, and that's the key equation.
Oh, well, but is there any hope for the future? Do you see, how it's all going to change?
Yeah, everything's getting better already. I mean, the fact that you and I can sit here tonight and talk about this, that's encouraging. The fact that so many people are listening, and maybe, I'm not telling anybody to believe me or trust me. I'm not a politician or a preacher. Don't trust me, but listen to what I'm saying, then go study it for yourself, and you'll find out I'm telling you the truth, and then it's not a question of belief. then you know the same things I know. And once we figure it out, then the good news is that there's more of us, honest, concerned, well-intentioned people, than there are of them who want to keep all the secrets and maintain the status quo, et cetera, et cetera. And just by that sheer knowingness, things will change.
Right. How long do you think before the people can really take back the power to control themselves, rule themselves?
Well, unfortunately, I think that's going to depend on how bad things get. As long as people can come home, sit down, have a nice meal, drink some beer, watch TV, go to bed, get up and do it all over again, then they're not going to want to be bothered. But when the dollar collapses, economy goes down the tubes, people have trouble maintaining their homes and buying food, then they're going to demand change, and it will change. And I'm just hoping that they'll remember that there are folks out here who now and in the past have been trying to warn us about what's going on, and give them a chance to put it all together instead of listening to the same rabble-rousers and malcontents and psychopaths that's got us into the problem we're in right now.
Right, but you've been on this. You wrote the book, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, and, you know, that is still being covered. Are you shocked that, like, here we are, what is it, 50, 60 years after 1963, that moment that really changed history,
yep,
and no one knows the truth? I mean, at least publicly.
Oh, we know the truth. We just, I get asked all the time, will we ever know the truth? And I just want to shake them, because we know the truth right now. What they're really asking is, will somebody, an official of the government, stand up, hold a press conference, and say, okay, folks, here's what happened. Here's who fired the gun. Here's who passed the money. You know, bye-bye. It was a coup d'etat. You know, no, that ain't going to happen. Too many people have too much to lose. Too many people were involved, not directly involved, but they understood what was happening, and they let it go. It's the old... the old British rhyme, you know, it says, treason doth never prosper. What's the reason? Because if treason prospers, none dare call it treason. And that's exactly what happened. People, most of the people had no understanding of what was going on. A small group of people at the bottom end, they just bought lock, stock, and barrel the idea that one guy did it, and that's it. And then there was people, a handful of people at the top who knew better, but they also saw that the power had shifted, and they better keep it to themselves, which they did. And by the way, just not wanting to start another whole thread here, but going through the same period of time that I saw in the wake of the Kennedy assassination, which was for about 15 years, it was considered bad manners to even talk about it and discuss it in polite company. We just don't want to talk about that. Well, we're in the same period right now about the attacks of 9/11. Then the attacks of 9/11 are so fraught with inconsistencies and bald-faced lies, and even the senior counsel, the chief attorney for the official 9/11 commission, said the story that they presented in their report to the Congress and to the media and to the public is entirely and inexplicably untrue.
But you don't think it was Bush himself or Cheney that ordered or that knocked those towers down? Or maybe you do think that.
I don't think Bush had the capability of doing something like that. Right. Cheney, I would withhold my opinion on, but until we have more facts. But the fact is, we were not told the truth of the 9/11 attacks, and I know I can already hear a lot of people going, "Oh, so what?" So what is, because look where we are right now. Look what's happening in Iraq.
I agree with you.
It all goes back to 9/11.
But we're not going to have more. We're at, you know, even as the Kennedy memory fades from the public mind, we're going to have less and less facts about all this. You know,
that's true. But that's when you have to, instead of the unsuccessful search for facts, what you have to do is start using your critical thinking. in the case of the Kennedy assassination, it's, you know, it's either one lone nut, which means it was just kind of an accident of history, or there was somebody else involved, which by dictionary definition means there was a conspiracy. Well, I'm here to tell you, and I think anybody that's done any reading whatsoever would agree that, yes, there was a conspiracy. Okay.
Oh, yes.
And, all right. And here we are 50 years on, and we still don't know about this conspiracy. Now, how is that possible? You mean the combined efforts of the Secret Service, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, all those alphabet agencies, all our police agencies, and we can't get to the bottom of some conspiracy? No, that doesn't make any sense. The only thing that makes sense is that this conspiracy was contrived and carried out and covered up at the very top of the U.S. power structure.
I agree with that. Now, do you agree that the same agencies are responsible for 9/11 as well? Or is it different? Did it shift there?
It's a little bit different. I don't think the agencies, well, in fact, in the Kennedy assassination, I don't think any of the agencies as agency. In other words, there's no question that there were CIA people involved in the Kennedy assassination.
Right, Hunt.
That's been pretty well established.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Does that mean that this was an act by the Central Intelligence Agency? I don't think so. I think there were most of the people in the agency, and particularly their new director, John McCone, I don't think they were aware of what these people were doing.
Right.
And it's the same thing with 9/11. It was an inside job. There were people within the military, within the intelligence agencies, who either participated or at least knew what was going on. But it was not an official. In other words, there was not a big official meeting of the FBI or the CIA or the NSA, and they said, "Okay, we're going to blow down these buildings. We're going to blame it on the Muslims." No, that didn't happen.
But you know, there is an unseen force that seems. I mean,
that's
just,
right. Now you're touching on my latest book, Our Occulted History.
Oh, is that coming out? Is that out, will be?
It's already out. It's brand new. It's been out a few months, and this is what I've done here, Alan, is tie two issues that are mostly thought to be separate, and hadn't been tied together. But it's really fascinating. And one is the popular concept of ancient aliens. Okay, ancient astronauts. The evidence, which, by the way, is even past compelling, it's almost overwhelming, that there was non-human intelligences at work on this planet thousands of years ago before our recorded history.
And are you talking about the Archons? A lot of people are naming the Archons as those that have controlled history. But anyway,
you've got different names for them. In fact, what I found really, really fascinating is when I went back and looked at what we call mythology.
Yeah.
And I looked at all of the names of the ancient gods as we have come to know them, like the Greek gods and the Egyptian gods. I'm sitting here trying to find my list.
Oh, okay.
Here we go.
The Greeks, the Romans, the Egyptians,
yeah.
Yes.
For example, in the Sumerians, who are the earliest civilization we have any record of, they predate the Egyptian by thousands of years, and they were writing down their cuneiform tablets thousands of years before the Bible was ever written down. And they talked about the Heavenly Father, the guy who runs the world from off the world. In their mythology, that was Anu. The Egyptians said it was Amun-Ra. The Greeks called him Kronos, and the Romans called him Saturn. But the characterization's the same. Same thing with the Heavenly Mother. Sumerian was Antu, Egyptian was Mut, Greek was Hera, and the Romans were Juno. It was all the same deal. And here's what I found really. So they're talking about the same personalities, the same characters. It's just that the names changed with the language. Now, what's really amazing is that I'm sure you're well aware of the Greek sky gods, the Titans, right?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, but what you probably don't know is that in these ancient cuneiform tablets from ancient Sumer, they had a word for those who live in the heavens, and that word was Titan.
Oh, I see.
Same word. Isn't that amazing?
So are you saying that the gods controlled the planet.
And the gods instituted the two basic control methods over humanity, which was money, finance, and religion. They appointed their spokespeople and their hybrids and said, okay, now you're going to represent us. And they became the priesthood. And they said, we speak for God, and God told us to tell you how to live, and here's what you must do and must not do, yada, yada, yada. Okay? Now, with the and that was quite an effective control mechanism for thousands of years until the advent of the printing press. And then we saw the Bible spreading all around, and then you saw the monolithic universal church start breaking into all these fragments as we see today, and the power of religion began to wane, and so they began the power of money. But it's always been an integral part of the control mechanism. When Jesus, the Prince of Peace, when was the one time that he really threw a fit and actually fought with some people? It was when he overthrew the tables and ousted the bankers, the money changers. And where were they? In the bank? No, they were in the temple.
So
religion and money have been tied together all the way back.
And they still are. Some people say those ancient aliens are still running the world in a sense. They're influencing the Bilderbergers and the families of the Illuminati to keep the planet as a slave civilization.
You've just answered your question about who are these people at the top of the food chain. And I think what I do in my book, Our Occulted History, is connect the ancient astronauts with the modern New World Order, this handful of individuals who are trying to run the world. And I think that once you understand that there are connections, there's family ties and bloodlines that run all through history. The knowledge passed through the Knights Templars from the mystery schools of Egypt and Greece and on into the Masons and on into other groups, the Illuminati. And then you look at the occult roots of the Nazis, and you bring it on forward to the fact that the Nazis came over here wholesale after World War II. See, we defeated the German army, but we never beat the Nazis. They were not even there at the surrender. They were not represented. We forced them to move, and a lot of them came over here under Project Paperclip because we decided we needed them so we could get their technology to use against the Russians.
Well, you mean Wernher von Braun? Do you mean?
And Dornberger and all those guys. But see, we not only got their rocket scientists, but we got their mind control experts. We got their psychiatrists. We got thousands of unreconstructed Nazis.
But Carol Rossi last year at Contact in the Desert, which you'll be at again this year, this August, said that Wernher von Braun only used the Nazis for his scientific research. He wasn't a Nazi. He was a scientist.
Well, of course, you know, what's he going to say after the war is over? But the truth is, as I detail and document in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, those Nazis were all in touch with their counterparts in Russia. There was very lax security all around them, and they even found out that they were sending letters to Mexico, which were then rerouted around to Russia. And so this actually led to a situation where I think the high rulers, the ones we were just talking about, I think what they were doing was secretly building a space force by integrating the rocket science of the Nazis and based on the Soviets and the United States. You see, the Russians were building heavy lift rockets that could carry big payloads. That's why they were able to put the first Sputnik up, the first man, the first woman, the first dog into space, got us all upset. We were building guidance systems. And so these Nazis then were in touch with each other and passing the information to these high ruler types, the ones above government. And they were putting the heavy lift rockets with the guidance systems and producing some really exotic aircraft. And this is what some of the researchers now are calling a breakaway civilization.
Wait, so the Nazis, you're saying their kind of research and their way of thinking infiltrated the U.S., and in a sense, it's been running the military-industrial complex since World War II.
Yeah, when we picked up their scientific knowledge, we also, unfortunately, were picking up their philosophy, which was National Socialism. And today we know it as neoconservatism because they can't very well use the term National Socialism because anybody knows anything knows that the German acronym is Nazi. Okay,
right.
So nobody wants to be identified with the Nazis, so they don't call it National Socialism anymore. They call it neoconservatism or the neocons.
Oh, I see. That's where the neocons come in. So they're running the world. They're running the politics. I mean,
exactly.
Cheney was the biggest neocon I think ever elected, wasn't he?
That's right.
Okay, so but
and then when
like
they started getting out of hand, and people were wising up, and they're going, "Wait a minute, you know these neocons are acting like a bunch of Nazis. You know they want a bigger defense budget. They want more. They're warmongers. They want to go fight all around the world. They want to bring everybody in under control. And so they were turned by the control over the mass media." From National Socialism to Obama and his Marxist socialism. Mm. It is still socialism.
Well, there's nothing wrong with socialism in the sense that, you know, people can
true.
Benefit. It's just how it's played out.
Exactly. Well, here's the problem with socialism. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Socialism, basically, just like basic democracy, sounds great on paper. But it rarely ever works out. And the problem with socialism is that once you set up a social program that's going to take care of people from cradle to grave, it requires central administration. You got to have a central power that makes sure it operates smoothly, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And these wealthy elite, these globalists, these whoever they are, they know they have the wealth and the power to buy up the central control, and that's how they're going to control the world. Now we're back to George Orwell, 1984, where they have the world under three economic blocks, all operating under socialism, and they play one off against the other continually for the stress and conflict necessary to maintain the profit line.
Is it possible to have a world, a real leader come forward, or you know, that really stands up for the people, or anyone
yeah,
who gets...
Yeah, but he'd get assassinated, just like Martin Luther King and John Kennedy and Gandhi and all the rest that tried, Jesus, all the ones who tried to stand up and say, hey, let's try peace for a change. For some reason, they always get murdered, you know? The thugs and the let's kill everybody's, the Dick Cheney's, they just keep going.
Yeah, it's amazing, but you feel things are changing and things will eventually...
Well, people are wising up. Yeah, people are wising up thanks to the Internet, and of course now even Obama's on board. They're all trying to do what they can to see if they can't curtail the Internet. And before long, if the people allow it, before long, if you want to go and see anything on the Internet that's not following the party line, you're going to have to pay extra, okay?
I probably won't
be able to get to it.
Huh. But let me, I know, and I think eventually everything will collapse, and I think we'll have the ideal utopia that's possible with free energy, with, you know, the breaking down of, you know, these barriers, these false barriers that separate the world, you know, not for a one world government, for a one world of peace, you know, I think.
Exactly, and that is possible, but here's the thing, to me it's a pretty simple thing, see? All we got to do is we'll all agree to disagree, but we'll agree that we'll disagree, but not disagreeably, okay? In other words, I grant you the right to believe anything you want to as long as you're not interfering with me.
It's,
you know, and that comes back to the, what, you know, do unto others as you want them to do unto you. It's that simple.
And, I think it is that simple, yeah.
It is that simple.
Yes.
Hey, you want to have stop war? I'll tell you how to stop war in two words. Stay home. If everybody just stay home, there wouldn't be a war.
Right. Let me ask you about the latest news thing everyone's calling conspiracy. I mean, it's kind of actually faded away, but the Malaysian flight that disappeared off the radar, that totally disappeared. Any thoughts about that?
Oh, absolutely. I've gotten that one pretty well figured out. But to understand what happened to the Flight 370, you have to understand about Global Hawk computer capture technology that was first used publicly on 9/11. Being an award-winning aviation aerospace writer for a number of years, when I heard that all four of those airliners that were involved in 9/11 had taken off from four separate airports with four separate hijack crews and traveling on four separate trajectories, and yet they all ended up hitting four separate targets or one crashing. And then I heard that their transponders all went off about the same time. That's not possible. And the only thing that makes that possible is you have to understand, like with a CB radio, if you have a CB radio and you're broadcasting and I come along and I'm outside your door and I have a stronger CB radio, I step on or overpower your broadcast and you're going to hear me, not you. And so this is kind of a simplified way of explaining that they have the technology for capturing the onboard computer of a major wide-body Boeing jetliner, and they could fly it anywhere they want to, remotely, regardless of what the hijack crew or the flight crew wants.
And this So you're saying that you don't need a pilot? Someone on the ground is flying those planes?
You can fly them from the ground, but on the case of 9/11, they were being controlled from an airborne command center, E-4B. The United States Air Force has at least two of these in the air at all time as a deterrent to first nuclear strike. In other words, if somebody was to launch a nuclear strike and hit all our air bases, you know, there's going to be at least one of those command planes in the air that can still order a counterstrike. Okay, and so we have these. They're there, and a big wide-bodied E-4B was photographed over Manhattan the day of 9/11, and over the Pentagon at the time it was hit. In fact, there was a brief mention of the mystery plane on the major news channels, and then that quickly went away. See, and you have to understand that you can do this. I interviewed an airline pilot back in the late 80s, and he suddenly popped off and said, you know, my job's just redundant. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, today the computer flies the aircraft. He says, I'm just here in case the computer breaks down. And sure enough, after researching, I found that in the summer of 2001, a Boeing 737 took off from Edwards Air Force Base in California and flew all the way to Australia, flew 12 successful missions, and then flew back and successfully landed at Edwards. And all the time, there was nobody on board.
Wow. So with Malaysian 370, what do you think happened?
Okay. There was at least 20 employees of Freescale, a San Antonio, Texas company that was working on advanced computer chips, including advanced defense technology, such as in stealth technology, et cetera, et cetera. And they'd just gotten a patent on some very cutting-edge new type technology, and they were on their way, and apparently this included some Chinese folks, and apparently they were going to go to China and maybe sell this technology to the highest bidder, which probably would have been China. And yet the people who own and control Freescale, which included the Carlyle Group, which is Henry Kissinger and the Bush family, and formerly the Bin Laden family, had a piece of Carlyle before they sold their portion, you know, and apparently they decided they didn't want this to happen, and so they utilized the remote control technology, Global Hawk technology, and they took control of the airplane, and they flew it to Diego Garcia.
Sean David Martin's been talking about Diego Garcia.
Yeah, our super secret base in the Indian Ocean.
So what did they do with the people on board and all that?
Well, that's a good question, but I think you and I probably have a good idea of what eventually happened to them.
Well, so our government would kill the passengers on the plane just because
Our government killed 3,000 people at Pearl Harbor, okay? They knew it was going to be attacked, and they knew when. But they didn't say anything about it because it suited their political purpose, which was to get a roused and united public into World War II.
Wow. So they did.
And they allowed 3,000 people to die on 9/11 to, again, accomplish their political agenda, which was to demolish two white elephant buildings and get $4.6 billion in payment for it and justify the war on terrorism and the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act and the Guantanamo and the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq and everything else that's followed to this very day.
So the Diego Garcia base is a top secret operation that
it's on an atoll in the Indian Ocean, and that's been one of our major staging bases for the drone strikes in Afghanistan.
But the Malaysian thing, I mean, and I'm going to Diego Garcia, if that is what happened. You don't think Obama even knows about that?
No, I doubt it.
So the people again behind the scenes.
Obama only knows what he's told, and unfortunately he surrounds himself with a bunch of sycophants, and they just tell him what he wants to hear and what they think he ought to hear.
Right. So again, it's those same people that are covering up the UFOs, that are covering up the plot to kill Kennedy.
Yep.
They're the ones that captured or controlled this plane, maneuvered it.
Ruled by secrecy.
It's still going on. Does anything shock you anymore?
Not much.
seriously.
Every time I think I've heard it all, I hear something else, and I just go, oh, my God.
Wow.
Here's what's shocking to me. Right now, if you're drinking New York City water, you're drinking fluoridated water. It's got sodium fluoride in it, and it's been dumped in there by city workers who have no medical degree, and there's no control over exactly how much or in what strength or whatever. So, in other words, you're being medicated against your will. You know, you have no idea what's doing to you. And sodium fluoride originally was a rat poison. Okay.
Right, and it calcifies the pineal gland that stops our psychic awareness.
Exactly. In fact, actually, the Nazis found out that if they put sodium fluoride in the water of their concentration camps, it kept all those inmates passive and docile and dumbed down, and it prevented them from having riots and uprisings, you know?
Well, so does marijuana. I think the marijuana infiltration into the 60s was to quell the political actions that were taking place. I mean,
it didn't quite work, did it?
It did work on some level, you know.
That's true. I know some people who just haven't done anything.
But I don't know. I'm a little bit of a minority opinion about that. But I can see, like, what's the best way to stop a revolution?
Drug the population.
Yeah, it'll make something, pretend that something is difficult to get, make everyone want it, and numb them out.
Well, and you speak of marijuana, you know, all of a sudden now, you know, after 40 years of prohibition, and now it's kind of breaking loose, and we've got Colorado and we've got Washington State that have actually legalized recreational use of marijuana, and many other states who now recognize that it's okay if you have a doctor's excuse to use medical marijuana. So why all of a sudden is it gaining traction, like maybe they're going to legalize it? And the reason for that is because in 2009, the U.S. Patent Office issued a patent for medical marijuana, and guess who the assignee was? The Department of Health and Human Services of the United States government. So now the government has the patent on medical marijuana, now all of a sudden maybe it's okay.
Well, it's just another way to dumb people down, I think. I mean, of course, you don't want to put all those people in prison, but everyone's been controlled to think that's a good thing. It's okay for people to drink alcohol, but it's still another way of cutting down the intelligence or Facebook or television. All these things
are
in the way of people really, really think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Are you there?
To take back the control. So I don't know. You think the ETs will ever show up and say, "Guess what?" You know,
not until we, in one way or another, asked to be contacted and demonstrate that we are willing to talk instead of shoot first and ask questions later.
Well, what about that thing that you were at with Richard Dolenz, and where he interviewed the CIA informant that went to Area 51 and then reported to Eisenhower and Nixon that the aliens were being kept there, but the aliens meeting Eisenhower? What about all those stories that you hear about?
Well, they've done that in my book, Alien Agenda, which is a journalistic overview of the UFO situation. And by the way, I've been told it's the top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs in the world. It's been translated in a dozen languages. And in there, I commissioned a remote viewing study of people who were either trained by the Army or trained by people who had been in the Army's remote viewing program to look at the ET situation. And one of the things they looked at was any possible contact. And most of them, to one degree or another, confirmed that there had been a meeting with Eisenhower and the ETs, and that basically they were saying, if you can put aside your national sovereignty issues, we are willing to come and try to help the people of the world. And they were basically told, no, we don't want to do that. We want to keep our sovereignty and our control over our individual countries.
Oh, I see.
We're going to have a united... We have to have... You know, what does the little ET say when he lands and comes out of the saucer? He says, take me to your leader. Well, who's our leader? We don't have a leader, okay? Putin doesn't speak for the Earth. Obama doesn't speak for the Earth. In fact, if you look at the polls, the only thing he even speaks for the United States. But so who speaks for the Earth? We don't have anybody. And until we have somebody and we can say, we represent the Earth, and here's what we want to do, then they'll deal with us. But we're not to that point yet.
Right. But hopefully that will be coming. And that brings us to this August at Contact in the Desert. You'll be one of the featured speakers there.
It's going to be a tremendous event. They've got all the heavyweights there.
Yeah, it's very exciting. They have, you know, Stephen Bassett, Richard Dolenz, Linda Moulton Howe, and of course Jim Marr's there, one of the leading researchers in the field. And do you think that could gain some kind of political force to make things happen? Or is this?
That'd be nice to think so, but I think just like last time, other than within the community where there's some talk and some scuttlebutt and some blogs, I think the mainstream, lamestream media will probably not cover it because, see, this is something that's not on their plate. They don't get it. They don't understand it. They fear being made fun of by people saying, well, you're writing about UFOs, you know, because they have not kept up with the times. You know, if this was 1960 or 1970, yes, the majority of people would laugh at you if you said, you know, something about UFOs. But today, most people have grown up with Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, science fiction stuff. And they just know, they understand it, and they're willing to talk about it. And I think that public attitude has changed dramatically.
Yeah, no, I think we are making some breakthroughs, and I think that's at least a dent in the secrecy. I think there's something going on that I think more and more people are interested in the subject because, yeah, you know, it's out of the closet. I mean, joining Jim will be George Norrie, David Sirita, James Gilliland, Laura Eisenhower. Have you hung out with Laura Eisenhower a bit?
Yes, a delightful person.
Yeah, very nice.
I think Carol Rosen's going to be there. She was with Fairchild's Industry and had worked with Wernher von Braun and tells how he was predicting that after the threat of international communism didn't work anymore, they would turn to international terrorism, probably out of the Middle East, which is where we are right now. And then when that kind of is not working so well anymore and it's beginning to fall flat, the next thing is going to be a threat from space, whether real or fabricated.
And that when do you think that will be coming?
Well, I think that I don't think they have a set deadline on that. I think that's just waiting in the wings for a time when they feel like they've just about run out the string on the current war on terrorism, you know.
Well, I think they still have a couple of good years of that.
Yeah, they do.
You know, especially with like these fundamentalists taking over Iraq. I mean, it's enough. You know, it's just very messy, the whole thing. Anyway, at the conference, what's going to be your focus? Your new book?
Yeah. I'm going to talk about how that we can connect the popular idea of ancient astronauts to the New World Order.
Okay, great. Well, Jim, thanks for spending some time on the show here.
Well, thank you. We covered a lot of territory.
We did, and there's a lot more. I mean, I just like how you pull all the pieces together, you know, and...
Well, it all is one big wall, ball of wax, you know, it's or a string, I guess. Hey, that's my Jim Mars string theory.
Exactly.
You pull on it, and it just keeps unraveling, and it's all convoluted, but it's all tied together.
I think we're going to get, at some point, I think something's going to break, and it'll come undone.
Well, I just hope that people will sit back, and instead of just reacting to events as they unfold, which they will, I would hope that they would start acting and saying, now let's find out who has the best interest of the public in mind, and let's put them in some sort of authority, you know, instead of just keep voting for the guy that's got the most money, the most corporate money to buy TV time.
Right. I mean, just the fact that the mainstream media won't even cover Contact in the Desert shows you how much they're being controlled by people in charge.
Exactly. You know?
Just the fact that when Stephen Bassett did his 5 days of citizens' hearings in Washington at the National Press Club, no one showed up. Why wasn't C-SPAN there, at least broadcasting some of it? You know,
well, you know, Alan, actually they were, okay?
They were there.
They were there.
They just did
not report on it, okay? In fact, this is really interesting. If you think back, the first big... thing that Greer did was in about June of 2001. Okay.
Yes.
And then the media was there, but they didn't report on it. They acted like it was just some kind of weird thing. But then as the summer drew on, it got into August, the internet was abuzz with stuff, and YouTube's had, you know, snippets of some of that testimony, and it was starting to gain traction. And even some of the secondary main media was beginning to pay attention and starting to carry some stories about that. And then what happened? 9/11. Yeah. And that was the end of that. You never heard any more about it.
So you're saying the major companies come to these things, but they don't report about it because they just kind of check it out.
That's right.
All right.
I know about this because I was in the print media for 50 years, and I had plenty of experiences going to my editors and saying, hey, here's a hell of a story. Let me go cover this. No, that's stupid. No, we don't believe that. In fact, let me give you a classic example.
Yeah.
It was a year after the Wright brothers flew at Kitty Hawk there in New Jersey that the New York Times finally carried a story on it. When it happened, the science editor of the New York Times said, well, heavier-than-air flight's impossible. This is a hoax. This is a bogus story, and they wouldn't run anything about it. It was only a year later after the Wright brothers had been invited to take their air machine to France, and they flew it around over there, and the European media jumped on it and said, wow, man can fly, you know. And finally, a year later, the New York Times, the paper of record, finally got around to reporting on it.
Right. So that's probably something like that may happen with the UFO situation.
I think so.
Well, we'll see. It's I think
I was really pleasantly surprised that back in 2010 when they had the UFO flyover over Stephenville, Texas, which is not too far south of where I live here, south of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And both the Texas media and even some of the national media actually reported on it and didn't laugh and snicker. They actually reported it in a pretty straightforward manner as if it was indeed a news story. I just thought that was quite surprising and hopeful.
I think more and more people, I mean, next week I'm interviewing Lynn Katai, who did a whole film on the Phoenix Lights.
Right.
And, you know, she was a doctor. Never ever thought anything about UFOs, would laugh it off until she sees this huge stream of lights over her house, over the city of Phoenix. It completely changed her life, and and opened her eyes to a bigger reality. And I think,
well, haven't
you
had that experience yourself, Alan? Don't you know some folks that said, "Oh, I never paid attention to that. I thought it was all just hogwash." But then I saw one.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where most people are. There's still a lot of people that say, "Well, show me." You know, if they can't hold it in their hand or look at it under a microscope, then they just don't believe it's real.
Right. But, but that's one level, okay. And then if they are here and it's true what you say, about the manipulation and the government and the politics done by these off-planet, you know, these ETs, then there's a whole nother level we have to deal with.
Exactly. And I think it's one that we better get onto because, like I said at the beginning of the program, this is not just an academic discussion. These folks want us dead, okay?
So the ETs want us dead, you're saying?
Yeah, well, whoever's killing the golden goose...
Right.
I mean, look at this. It's this simple. Look at the United States today. We have a workforce that, for the most part, wants to work. And we have a reasonably educated workforce. And this country is still very rich in mineral resources. Okay? So since we have all the resources and we've got a workforce that wants to work, why are we in such bad economic straits? And the answer, when you brush aside all the rationalizations, is quite simply because somewhere somebody wants it that way.
Yeah.
If nobody wanted it that way, it wouldn't be that way.
Right, but obviously it is that way. And,
but obviously, since it is that way, somebody wants it that way, and we need to find out who those people are so that we can figure out how to get leverage on them.
If we'll ever be able to find out,
That's
like...
Right. And it's not too far out, it's not too soon to ask the burning question, are they... even us.
Yeah. That's the question you ask in the occulted history book, huh?
Right.
I see. Well, that's just come out?
Yes.
Or is it out?
Collins, you can get it at any bookstore or on my website, jimmars.com. That's Jim and Mars with two R's.
M-A-R-R-S, jimmars.com. And, yeah, you can also get in Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, The Terror Conspiracy, The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy. You're the main conspiracy guy around.
Well,
I
was trained as a journalist, and I was taught way back there in the days of the old Republic to try to find the truth as best I can find it and present it to my readers. And fool that I was, I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing.
Right, so people can say, oh, it's another conspiracy, or you can say, well, guess what? This is what's really going on. It's the truth.
Exactly. I don't deal in conspiracy theory. I deal in conspiracy facts.
Right, right.
And if anybody doubts that there's any conspiracy, just go look up the number of people who are serving time in prison right now, charged and convicted with conspiracy.
Oh, really? Are there lots of people
in prison? They put mafia guys in jail. They put tax evaders. You know, they got all kinds of people that they never could prove anything hard on them, but they got them for conspiring.
But the conspiracies you're talking about are the guys behind the scenes.
Well, these are the big conspiracies. They're so big that the people at the top cover for them, okay, either because they're involved or because they don't want to give away the one rule of the game, which is don't give away the game.
Right. Wow. So, yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. No, well, good luck with the new book, and I'll see you in August.
Are you going to be out at Contact in the Desert?
Yeah, I was out there last year. I'm going to be emceeing one of the stages out there. So I'm also do some interviews out there. Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there in August, August 11th, 8th to the 11th at Joshua Tree. If you want to go, you can get tickets at contactinthedesert.com. You can see Jim and a bunch of beautiful speakers. Actually, really the best in the field, I think, are going to be at this gathering.
Absolutely. They've got the cream of the crop. They've got just a tremendous lineup.
Mm-hmm. So I'd love to hear some discussions with like you and some of the other people out there, maybe even people like Nick Pope, who just wrote a book about the Renlis and Taurus UFO landing. be interesting to have you dialogue with some of these people out there.
Well, I think they've got us set up. I think I'm supposed to be on one or more panels. So, yeah. I look forward to seeing you when we're out there.
All right. I'll see you out there, Jim. Thanks. Thanks for being a guest tonight.
Okay, Alan. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Good night.
Okay. Good night. Talk to you soon. Okay. That was Jim Mars, jimmars.com. He will be one of the featured speakers at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center, Contact in the Desert. If you want more information about that, you can go to 760-365-8371. That's August 8th to the 11th of this year, 2014. I will be out there emceeing. There are some ticket contests if you want to go to contact.com/newrealities. There's you can enter like a chance to win a ticket to the whole conference. I recommend that. Or you can just go and get still an early bird special ticket at contactinthedesert.com. All right. Thanks for listening. This is Alan Steinfeld. And stay tuned next week, same time. Good night.